A little snow in downtown Indianapolis. It is cool. Well, we'll call it cold outside here in Indy, but inside Lucas Oil Stadium, starting to heat up. The NFL Scouting Combine, they've been preparing for a couple of days. The testing is about to begin. We welcome you into the Indiana Convention Center. Here's what's up today on Jaguars.com Live. Dave Caldwell, Jaguars General Manager, will join us here on set. And an old rival joins us as well. Slash is in the building today. Cordell Stewart, the former Steelers quarterback, now an analyst for TuneIn Radio. He'll talk Jags and the AFC South with us coming up. We start today. John Osier with us, of course.
I'm right here.
GM Dave Caldwell is with us, making the rounds today. What's up?
I'm confused.
Why?
I have not seen snow.
We walked around. It was falling outside.
I don't know about that.
It wasn't accumulating.
For okay. A Buffalo guy, that wasn't snow, JP.
Okay. It was
that
a
was
tease.
Just some stuff in the air. I'll move back so you can see JP.
All right, there we go.
Yeah.
There we go.
So there you have it. You're making the rounds today, and you know there's a lot of big questions around the Jags right now in terms of personnel. A lot of questions about Blake Bortles. Mm-hmm. Doug Marrone yesterday said Blake is the quarterback. We're going to build around him. That's been the statement from you as well. And how do you do that, though? How do you build around Blake, and what do you expect from him in this offseason moving forward?
Well, I think a lot of it comes schematically. You know, Nathaniel Hackett, I think, has got a great plan for him. Coach Milanovic, who we just hired, I think, is going to really do some good things with Blake. And then, you know, I think kind of rising tide raises all ships with, you know, our receiving core, our running game, our offensive line. And it's not just about the quarterback. Obviously, it's a huge piece, but he needs to continue to grow, and so do people around him.
A rising tide raises all ships. I'm going to use that tomorrow.
There you go.
That's good stuff. Hey, when you were on the podium half an hour ago, you're asked a lot about the relationship with Doug, Tom, and Dave.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this feeling among observers, there's no way this can work. I mean, I'm sure you've heard it, but yet in talking to you and talking to Doug, especially talking to you today, it's a good situation that you like. And that's a real thing. You really do like what's going on.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. And I've really embraced it. And I know Doug has, too. And I believe Tom has, too. And I think the three of us have different personalities. And I think that's a good thing. And Tom and Doug obviously have coaching backgrounds. I have a personnel background. And it's a great structure for this organization.
Now, you mentioned Tom and Doug coaching backgrounds. You mentioned over there after you got the podium that – you're a little outnumbered there. Talk about that a little bit.
No, I think it's good because, I've never coached, and that's not my skill set. And I've always told Tom and Doug that. I said, you know, anything that does with coaching, you guys handle that. And they've done that. And then, with the personnel stuff, I kind of bring them up to speed.
Dave Caldwell with us, Jaguars general manager. A big part of this combine, of course, is the interview process where you have a hotel suite and you bring guys in. Oh, is it 60 interviews you get here?
Yep.
Yeah. So what do you get out? What is your goal when you bring a guy in that room?
Well, the goal is to put a face behind the face mask, I guess. And, we just watch them, from afar on video, and then now you get to meet the people. And then you have a series of questions and concerns that kind of you've done your research and say, hey, these are the four things I got to find out about this player. And then you find out that about them and you put them a little bit on video, have them run you through some of their plays, and then maybe get them on board a little bit, see what their football IQ is, and then see if we have any other issues. And then if we do, after 15 minutes, we'll say, okay, let's bring this guy in for a top 30 visit.
That's a lot in 15 minutes,
it
right?
It is. And understand that a lot of these players have been interviewed at the Senior Bowl or at the East-West game or somewhere along the line. And we also have chances to go to their schools and visit with them too.
Specific to the draft, and I know you for 4 years now as the GM, you're going to tell me you're going to get a good player at number four. I get that. But how deep does that top group go, and does it match up with what you feel like you'll probably need come April?
It does. And, obviously, when you're picking in the top five, there should be some good players there. But I think throughout the draft, I think that the late ones, twos, second, third, fourth round, I think you're going to get good players throughout it. Very similar to, I think, last year's draft where we were able to – the first four picks, get guys that we feel really good about.
I'm not going to ask you specifically, obviously, who you're taking it for. It's a stupid question, which I'm not incapable of asking, but I won't ask that. but philosophically, running back and safety seem to be guys who are being mentioned up in that group. There are people who don't think you take those positions that high.
Sure.
Are you a believer in that sort of philosophy or safety and running back, is that okay that high?
Well, I think it depends on your team. Dallas did it last year. It worked out fairly well for them. Kansas City did it 6 years ago with Eric Berry, and it's worked out very, very well for them. So
if it's special, it's okay.
Yeah, I think if they're a special player, it also depends on your team needs and where you are as a franchise. But the way the salary cap is, that was the mindset back when you were paying your top five picks $51 million. You know, it's different now where you could pay your, if you take a safety and you're paying them $23, $24 million over 4 years, well, it's $5, $6 million a year for your starting safety. That's right in line with the range.
Let's go to social media. Some fan questions today. I know you're a big social media guy. You're always on Twitter all the time. Let's start off on Twitter. Hey, Dave.
That was a joke, by the way.
Do you now plan on keeping Brandon Linder at center long term?
I think that's the plan. And obviously, you know, depending on what we do in free agency or injuries, or Brandon is a unique individual because he can play both guards. He could play center. He could play right tackle if we needed him to. Probably could get us out of a game of left tackle if we had to. So. But he really excelled last year at center. So if we can solidify that spot and keep him there, and we still have AJ who's still growing and playing at a good level, and we expect big things out of him. And then we still, you know, are in process of trying to get Luke back.
Let's hold off on Linder at left tackle. That means it's a bad day at the office, right? if you're down that.
That's not the ideal situation.
Right. Another question, and this is towards running backs coming out in the draft. Thoughts on Leonard Fournette and Dalvin Cook as prospects?
They're very good prospects, excellent prospects. So
that's all you got. Okay.
Yeah. I think my 10-year-old son has told me that multiple times. More so Dalvin Cook.
Let's finish with Facebook here. It's from Susan Smith Nix. Seems like we do improve every year with free agency since you became GM. Do you think one-year/show-me contracts work the best?
I think that would be a great system to have in place for everybody.
Right.
With free agency. But unfortunately, it takes two to agree to a contract like that. And usually the players that are in high demand don't accept those deals, nor should they. So, but if you can get some players that are in one-year deal, there are a lot of positives of that. A is you get the compensatory aspect of it, you know, the following year if you don't re-sign them. So, but it does. It gives a player a lot to prove. And, you know, hopefully when you do invest in a player and you do invest in a multi-year deal and you give them a lot of money, you're signing the right guys that have – high character, that are highly competitive, that regardless, they don't need the 4-year contract to compete at a high level.
You said on the podium just now, you were asked your needs, and you said offensive line, not necessarily. A lot of people think the offensive line needs to improve. Talk me through the line and what you guys like about how it stands now.
Well, if you look what we did last year, I mean, when we first got here 4 years ago, I think we were giving up close to 70 sacks mm-hmm. per year. I think we were right at 34 last year. So pass protection was much better. Brandon Linder's still young, going into his fourth year. A.J. Khan's going into his third year. Jeremy Parnell went healthy at the end of last year, played at a very high level.
And so he played better than people think at the end of the year, correct?
He played very well at the end of the year. And then, you know, we're in the process of taking care of the left tackle position. And so now, okay, we got left guard. Well, we've had Chris Reed that played at a high level when he played last year, which people don't kind of – the average people don't recognize. You got Luke Joker when he was healthy, played the first 3 or 4 games pretty well at left guard. So, you know, if that's one – if we have one need on right. offensive line and that's at left guard, I think we're going to be okay. I think we can find that spot, whether it's in the draft or whether it's in free agency or whether it's you know, somebody that we have on the roster currently.
Some left guard calls being made next week, perhaps.
Possibly. Or maybe a right guard that
right.
you move.
Sure, right.
Because AJ's got the ability to move the left guard, which he played in college.
A lot of options there. Yeah. You know, and you know, Doug yesterday was asked about Beecham, and that's said that was still a possibility
sure
even to talk to him, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
sure is.
It'd be interesting moving forward. Dave Caldwell is with us, Jaguars GM. So, do you like this fun day? This is every year at the Combine. You go; it gets bigger here in the media center.
Where's lunch?
It's upstairs by the writers, so
there
good luck
go.
Going up there,
there
with
you
the writers.
It's media only, Caldwell.
Oh, jeez.
We appreciate your time, Dave.
Thanks, guys.
Jaguars
Dave,
GM
thanks,
thank you,
Dave Caldwell joining us here on Jaguars.com Live. Our coverage continues here in Indianapolis this week. We'll have Jaguars.com Live again tomorrow and then also on Saturday. Inside the Jaguars, we'll wrap up our coverage Saturday here from the Indiana Convention Center. J.P. Shadrick, John Osier, Cordell Stewart is coming up shortly on Jaguars.com Live.
They're signing a guard, Shadrick. Come on.
You think?
Come on, brah.
You think?
Well, I mean, and something else he said off the podium, which I'm pointing to over there, he did specifically say he didn't think the offensive line was the major need. And Jonathan Cyprian and Prince Amukamara, which is what he said over when he was talking on the podium, it sounds like they will be testing the market. Now, I don't know if that means they go on to free agency in those few days beforehand during that negotiating period, figure it out, and then they get re-signed. That's always a possibility. But right now, those two positions are in flux. So it's a good draft for safety. Cornerback is – I don't want to say it's very deep in free agency because nothing's ever very deep in free agency. But there are guys available. So I think the areas to watch over the next 5 or 6 weeks, if there's an area that's in flux, it's going to be that defensive backfield. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I would anticipate signing a cornerback, and then that leaves what they're going to do with strong safety. Do they bring Sit back? I don't think that's out of the question. Probably not a possibility once they hit free agency, but that's the area to watch as next week gets going, that in the left guard spot or the right guard spot, whatever they choose to do with that.
You mentioned the backfield and the cornerback spot. There's a lot of talk of A.J. Bouye from the Texans, if he gets out there.
Yeah, I think he will get out there, and yes.
Played at a high level last year. Man.
Yeah, and that would be one that it's always hard to predict free agency. So much of what we talk about here at the Combine, by the time those first few hours go by and you start seeing the tweets coming out, you realize that all the things you talked about are blown up, and this guy's in San Diego and he's signing there. But that would be a very likely target. Zeitler from Kansas City and Warford from Detroit at guard feel like good fits to me there. Those are the guys that I'll be watching in the early going. And we'll see. I mean, it's so hard to talk about this week because history and my experience in this tells me that we're talking about guys who within 4 hours of this thing opening, poof. But one of those guys wouldn't shock me to see on this team and in heavy conversations next week. That's not coming from Dave. That's just coming.
No, it's just how it works.
Looking at the market, it seems like that could be.
And you know they want to be in the mix on the top-tier free agent guys, have a guy or two targeted in that window because there's always layers to this thing. Once you get a week or so in, those top-tier players are gone.
And Dave joined us on Jaguars today on 1010 earlier this week. And the gist you got from him is there's a guy at each position this year in free agency. I don't think it's a particularly deep free agency class, particularly after all the tags hit. There's a guy or two at every position that they feel like is worth going after in that first wave. And then after that, you let the market settle down, you see what happens next. I don't think you're going to see a six-player signing like you had in the last and you've had that in the last couple of years. I don't necessarily anticipate that, but it would surprise me a little if they're not in really, really pricey, really, really big on at least two guys next week. And that's just a gut feeling, but we'll see.
They've got the money to spend, and they've got to spend it. And
I wish they'd spend some on me, JP. I mean, I keep hearing of all this money they got to spend. I mean, 4 or 5 off seasons in a row, all this money, all this cap space, nothing ever gets to old Johnny yet.
They don't get the ozone and extension.
No, huh? It's
not how it works.
But I'm happy. Don't anybody tell you to.
We're out to Cordell Stewart. He's due to join us here momentarily here on Jaguars.com Live. This will be an interesting conversation with Cordell coming up. We've never had him on our air. I know that. I've personally been on their show on TuneIn Radio a few times during the season, and you know it's going to be interesting to get his take on the Jaguars organization. Seeing it as a player in the early, late 90s and playing against the Jags a number of times.
Well, I'm sure he'll talk about this, but as people know, I covered the team 95 to 2000, and a lot of those years were spent with the Steelers as a real rival. And when I say real rival, the games went back and forth, and they were intense games. There were 4 or 5 of those games that still, I think, stand. I didn't cover the ones in the mid-2000s with the Steelers, the playoff games, some of the ones that fans remember. There was a 9-0 game at Everbank Field that's very memorable. But back when they were both in the AFC Central, they went back and forth, and the games mattered a great deal. Both teams were pertinent, and one team felt like they had to get through the other to get there. And there were years where they split, and they were costing each other things. And that's when you get a rivalry going. That's where this feeling that a lot of fans have of the Steelers as a rival built. And Cordell was a big part of that. There was, I still think, one of the best games in franchise history was the game the Jaguars lost in overtime to the Steelers. I believe it was 98. I may be remembering that wrong. But Jerome Bettis scored in overtime, and it was a knockdown, drag-out slobber knocker. I mean, it was – 23-17, I think, Bettis scored at the end. And it was one of those games that after you cover it, no matter what team you're covering, you sort of realize, hey, this is what the NFL really is about, and this is where memories are made. And I'm sure Cordell has a memory of that one. And I was right, 23-17. Pretty good memory.
October 26, 1997 at Three Rivers Stadium.
Yeah, and that was obviously when the Jaguars were first. They had had the run in 96, but the Jaguars as a team were first realizing, hey, the run in 96 was no fluke. We're good. We're going to contend for a long time. So it was a cool time to be a part of it, and Cordell was a big part of those games.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Now, he played 14 games. We'll get
obviously,
to this
he's not going
to
be here. So we're, yeah,
we're trying to talk him
so we can talk about
we
Cordell.
See him down the way.
Maybe magically he'll appear.
Yeah, well, I don't know. We can't wave it to him either. He's yapping with somebody down the way. We'll try to get Cordell down here. And so we don't want to spoil all the stats that he had against the Jags coming up. Always fun, though, to get that perspective as we move forward here.
Well, Dave was in, I mean, and we can get back to Dave until Cordell gets here. He had talked to us on 1010 earlier this week, but today it was interesting to hear him talk off the podium about Luke Jokel. To me, it sounds like there's a good chance Luke Jokel returns because of the injury, because they like a lot about what he does. I wouldn't rule that out next week. But, again, I think the interesting thing is the secondary position, we've all sort of assumed that Prince and Sipp wouldn't be back. It sounds to me from sort of reading the tea leaves in between what Dave says, I don't think Prince is going to be back.
Right.
I think Sipp is probably a low percentage chance because, to me, once a veteran who's in that, you know, top 25 free agents, and that's where Sipp is nationally right now, once they hit the market, typically speaking, it's unusual for them to go test it and then go back to the old team. It's not necessarily they resent the old team. It's just the dynamics are such that once he starts talking to whoever's interested, all of a sudden that price starts going up and the guy says, you know what, I'm taken, I'm going, I'm gone. So I'd love to see Sipp back. I like the guy. But I'd be surprised if either of them in a Jaguars uniform. I think Dave feels, just from sort of listening to the tone of his voice, feels like there's a much better chance of Sipp coming back. I'd put them both up back pretty low right now.
And if you go sign a Bouye, then Prince, there's no real place for Prince, right? Because you got Colvin, and you'll have Bouye, and you have
Jalen. That'd be the obvious replacement. And that's what it sort of feels like could be shaping up. But again, what feels like could be shaping up on Thursday of Combine is much different than what might actually shape up on Thursday of Real World, which is when free agency starts next March 9th.
Yeah, March 9th. There's a two-day window before that to negotiate with representation. I don't think they can actually talk to the players in that time frame.
But that's changed the dynamic of everything.
It has.
And it becomes a situation that, or last year, for people who don't think you can ever get back, Mercedes Lewis negotiated a little bit last year and then did come back. So it happens.
Right.
Cordell Stewart.
Cordell Stewart jumps in on set with us here on Radio Row.
Sorry for all the noise.
Slash, it's great to see you.
Yes, it's always good.
Always great.
You know, we're going through some of the history of the Steelers-Jaguars rivalry.
Oh, they were big ones.
And you played 14 games against the Jags. 10 starts as the quarterback.
All right.
We got statistics for you.
I don't know if you're ready. I know I do.
Did you?
I know I did.
Are you sure?
I'm almost positive.
Well, the Steelers and Jags swapped those 14 games, 7 up, 7 down each
way. Right, right.
You threw for 1,949 yards, 7 touchdowns, 11 picks.
Yeah.
Good Jaguars defenses in those days.
They were pretty good back in those days. Let me see. Who did you guys have back in those days?
Donovan Darius.
Yeah, Donovan Darius. That was a hard game. For some reason, I don't know why, but playing against Jacksonville wasn't easy. I just remember in 2002 – on my way out of Pittsburgh, I had a chance to play against you guys there. I think it was 2002.
2002 is your last game, and you won 25-23.
Yeah, 25, and I think I played you guys in probably 99 there or 2000 on the road there as well. I won that one too, so I was back-to-back wins on that run. Jacksonville, and it was hot. It was always hot in Jacksonville. you know, Green Bay caught hell playing against you guys the first game of the season last year. Remember that?
Yep.
I thought you guys could have pulled it out. But Jacksonville has always been a very, especially at that time, we were the AFC Central, too, at that time. And then in the end, we became AFC North. But it was tough sledding against Jacksonville for some unknown reason. At home, we probably had more success at home against Jacksonville than we did in Jacksonville.
And those were, I mean, I happened to cover the games for the newspaper back then, Cordell. And it was a real – I know for the Steelers, they had other rivals. For Jacksonville, it was a real rival. And it had the feel of a – at least a mini rivalry from your guys' perspective as well, because at the time you had to go through each other to get where you wanted to go.
Yeah, and that's winning the division or getting into the playoffs.
Right.
And so when you, you know, have a Natron Mean Business, that guy, you know, it was good times and it was great battles. I just remember my first year starting in 97, it was a blocked field goal. Chris Hudson, who was a teammate I had at Colorado, ended up running it back, and Coach Carr scowls at him and give a little if
did this
or whatever on the sideline. But we were coming back in that game. I think that was one of my coming out party games in the second half, myself and Yancey Thigpen. We connected very well in that game, and I think that's when we went on our run in 97 to make it to the playoffs in the AFC Championship game. But
and
Jacksonville
the next
was always
game,
tough.
You guys got him in Pittsburgh in the overtime game when you came back
in.
And
I think we did
Bettis
a shovel pass.
Pass,
yeah, and I think I threw for 305 yards that game. And, oh, yeah, I had a
See if you
game.
Got that one right. Yeah. If that's 305, he's a stat guy.
The same game you were talking about, John?
Yeah.
317.
Okay. 17. I was close. I think Jerome got the last 16 yards or so.
That was an overtime game back and forth. That was
it was. It was a great game. I think Yancey had – I think that was another coming out game we had. Yeah, it was. That was good times. Again, those rivalries we had. And it wasn't just Jacksonville. It was Cleveland. It was Cincinnati. It was Houston, or it became overturned over to Tennessee at the time. You know, those are great rivalries within. That was the blue-black division then. They
Baltimore was in that a little bit, too.
If Baltimore came along. They came along. Yeah. They came along in the latter part. But that was the blue-black division. I think they tried to say the NFC North is the blue-black division now. But we were that division that no one really wanted to see, because we pride ourselves on great defenses went to that division. We tried to establish a great running game in that division. And we had mobile quarterbacks in that division. Jeff Blake, myself, Mark Brunell, you know, and Steve McNair.
McNair was
you know, so it was the division that no one wanted to see outside of it and also within it. We knew it was a battle every single week. So it was one of those types of divisions.
Cordell Stewart is with us. NFL on TuneIn Radio. How are you liking it over
there? It's great. Myself and Brian Weber, we're on from 4 to 7 Eastern Time, Monday to Friday. We're covering everything around the league. We're like the Netflix of audio, so to speak. You can be in Dubai, honestly, and you can have your iPhone and you can listen to us live. Or you can, if you guys have your station and if it's regional and you're outside of your area, you can go to TuneIn. You can find us and we can find you and you can listen to us, have music and everything on it. I mean, we're pretty good when it comes to being able to give everyone an opportunity. And if you can't hear us live, you can go on demand and find us on demand and listen to us on demand as well. So it's a free app. Wide open is free. You know, pay any money unless you get the premium package, which allows you to do a lot of good things within it. But myself and Brian Weber, we do a great job. And, again, I'm one of you guys now.
I know, right?
You know, I put on two – I have two hats, though.
That's it.
You know, I put on the pundit hat, and then I put on the player's hat. And I think that's a good crossover deal between myself and Brian Weber when we're talking some good football sometimes.
I've been on your program a few times, and it always comes up about Blake Bortles, Jaguars quarterback. What's your take on Blake? Why did he take a step back last year?
Oh, man, he needs some help, to be honest. I know you have Chris Ivory there now, and I say help is any for any young quarterback, especially when you're struggling, especially from day one. You know, whether it's Blaine Gabbert, whether it's Blake Bortles, whomever it may be. I think you had Mark Brunell was probably the last success story you had in Jacksonville. He had Natron Mean Business. He had Tony Boselli. I mean, I think he had Keenan McCardell.
Gerard had his moments.
Yeah, he had his moments, but I'm talking true success.
Sure. Yeah.
That was the last time. And I think in order to have some success, I think they tried with Chris Ivory. They tried because Chris Ivory was playing really good and with the Jets when he was there. I think that's why you saw Ryan Fitzpatrick and the offense really excel the way they did. I think when talking to you earlier, when I saw you over with us, I talked about Adrian Peterson. I'm like, why not give it a run? I mean, what do you truly have to
lose? How old
lose?
Is he, like 34?
And he's still better than most in the National Football League. And
how long will he be that way?
Here's my thing. You know, weather matters. Weather truly does matter for older guys. You know, when it comes down to playing in the game the way he plays, he's up in Minnesota. I know he's gotten injured a few times. He still had – last year, I think, was one of his tougher years throughout his career. Maybe had another year where he had to sit out again before. You bring him in and you give him a chance to work with Chris Ivory. You know, I made the same thing for Adrian Peterson going to Houston with Lamar Miller. if you take some of the pressure off, similar to what you have with DeMarco Murray, you saw what happened to him in Philly and Chip Kelly's offense. Sat out for an entire year. Came back, got help from Derrick Henry. You split the time just a little bit. The red zone became one of the most efficient red zones in the National Football League. Why? Because they ran the football. They were committed to running the football. You give someone like Blake Bortles the opportunity to have that two-headed monster in the backfield, to where if one guy gets injured, the next guy up. Lamar Miller got hurt in Houston. What ended up happening to Brock Osweiler? It got worse for him until you got Tom Savage, who came in and kind of gave you a different change-up just a little bit. Psychologically, I don't think too many people are committed to the running game like we once were in right. Pittsburgh. That's why Pittsburgh was so successful for so long.
But it's a passing league now.
Yeah, know, but right? Guess what? The teams that ran the football very well are the ones that really won. Think about the Atlanta Falcons. Why do you think they were so successful? It wasn't because they threw the ball very well. It's because they had Coleman and Freeman.
Yeah, right.
But you had Coleman
well.
And Freeman out of the backfield. I mean, those chunk of runs, you know, Coleman being able to catch the football out of the backfield as well as one run well.
Right.
Freeman, who ran the football very, very well, averaging probably, and I'm just going to throw up some crazy number, probably what, 12 yards? Maybe let's just be realistic. Maybe 6 to 7 yards a run because he got chunks of 30 yards, 40 yards. It creates down the distances to be great for your play caller and Kyle Shanahan. And so I know why some think, you know, like to be a part of the copycat league way of playing. It doesn't work all the time.
Right.
When you have your quarterback that's Blake Bortles who struggled, okay, why did he struggle? It wasn't just him. It's because you didn't have anything up front. You didn't have a quality running game. You didn't give him a chance to have that 2nd and 3. You didn't give him a chance to have the 2nd and 4 and manageable, you know, 3rd and 4 to 3rd and 6. If you're 3rd and 8, 3rd and plus, no one can get that done. And there's one team in the National Football League that I think relies on the passing game, but it's different. It's New England. How do they do it? Do those little screens. Yeah. They might do those little option routes to Edelman and Amendola.
Right, their short passing game
and
is
then you get
game.
In the red zone and you hit the little seam routes to the tight end and Bennett or Rob Gronkowski when he's healthy. And then you mix it up with a nice little ball down the field to Chris Hogan, someone who was a lacrosse player at Penn State, which was his primary sport. So if you can get someone or even think about it for a minute, an Adrian Peterson, just imagine how different it would be because you have great talent on the outside at the receiver position.
Is Leonard Fournette the next AP?
I think he's another. He's a great one. Honestly, I know people are complaining about the 5 pounds he gained. Come on.
240.
He's a monster. He's a monster.
How about Dalvin Cook?
I think he's okay, but he's not a Leonard Fournette. And I think if, you know, he's been a part of that inclement weather for a long time. He's at LSU. It's hot. You know, it's humid. You get someone like Leonard Fournette in there to help out Chris Ivory. I can guarantee you guys you will compete in the AFC South. AFC South division is not a hard division to actually win in. 9-7 for the Tennessee Titans normally is either a winning division, you won a division, or you're going into the playoffs.
You say it's not hard, Cordell. It's been hard for this team.
Well,
it's hard
because you don't have the right personnel groupings
right.
to make
it's
it work.
Right.
I'm just saying, and just think about it. When you think of a Leonard Fournette, you think of an Adrian Peterson, you think of Cook, who you just mentioned, you bring that in and you emphasize running the football.
Right.
You emphasize everything between the tackles. You allow the passing game to be extra. But you force that downhill style football. That's why Tennessee was so good this year. That was a team that only had, what, five wins in 2 years. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, Mike Mularkey just comes out of nowhere. You have Derrick Henry and you have DeMarco Murray, a guy who said everyone said was done. He has one of his better seasons in his career, probably the last season he had really good success, what, 2014-15 season when they played Green Bay and it came down to that questionable catch for Dez Bryant.
Boy, with your thoughts on the running game, you'd never know you used to play for the Steelers.
Well, I'm sorry. It worked.
The Steelers guys die hard.
And even when you guys had a running game with Jacksonville at the time, when we were competing.
Absolutely.
You guys, I mean, it works.
It can work, but you have to commit to it and go against the grain.
You have to
right.
commit to it. And I know it's a copycat league, and we just mentioned that. But I have to go with what works. And again, I was the only guy, and I'm proud to say it, who said Tennessee – the Titans will be the second best team in that division. If they slip up and get a couple wins that they're not supposed to get.
Which they did. Sure.
Which they did.
Yep.
They can end up winning that division. And seriously, they were 4 to 5 plays away from winning that division. What did the Houston Texans win? What, 97? That was another 97.
Yeah, I think 97. They tied, but it was
and tied. And they tied, right? And it just so happened the Miami Dolphins ended up being a good team, and it made it hard for the Titans to actually get in, which I think would have been hard sledding for them because Marcus Mariota ended up getting beat up against the Jacksonville Jaguars by cracking or fracturing his fibula in his leg. So if they can have that opportunity to get the running game going, I think they'll be okay.
Give him a follow on Twitter at K/10 Cordell Stewart. Yes. Slash. Good to see you.
Always great, guys.
Good seeing
I appreciate
you. We appreciate
good luck
it.
To you guys.
Thank you.
Thank
good
you.
To have you here
yes.
on Jaguars.com Live. Give him a listen on TuneIn Radio, the NFL on TuneIn Radio as well. We leave you today with a look inside the NFL experience. There's a Jaguars setup. Every team in there has one. And it'll be open to the fans for the first time this year, John. It's going to be a lot of fun the next few days here.
If you say so.
Only if I
no,
say
no,
so.
No, it is fun. And this thing gets bigger and more fan-friendly. I'm waiting for the day where they open up Lucas Oil Stadium and there's 60,000 in there. Football people will recoil at that.
Already.
But that's coming.
Our thanks to Dave Caldwell, Cordell Stewart as well, for John Osier and our entire crew back at home and here in Indianapolis. I'm J.P. Shadrick. Thank you for watching Jaguars.com Live, presented by Everbank.